Welcome to the Ask Wise Counsel Show with host John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel, which is an ongoing learning process for entrepreneurs of faith. John has spent more than 35 years helping over 400 CEOs and has written 3 books on how the Lord is using the hearts of business leaders and employees to build true wealth. Visit AskWiseCounsel.com for hundreds of resources and interviews to help you make the best business decisions. Let's join John and his guest co-host.
Well, good morning. This is John Beener, and you're listening to the Ask Wise Counsel Show. Thank you for joining us. We're very excited this morning because we have a special co-host with us here today, Lee Lyon, who is a registered investment advisor representative, and I've known him for many years and can vouch for his credibility, his smarts, his intelligence, the smartest guy I've ever met in the investment advisory business, and I've got to meet a lot of people through the years, so we're excited to have you again. Our agenda here today is that we're going to start out by telling you more about Lee. We'll get a dialogue with him. Say hello, Lee, to everybody.
Good morning, John. Thank you for having me this morning.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about his background and what he thinks about the industry and what's changing and that kind of thing. And then we're going to go ahead and go into questions that we get from our listeners. So if you have a question, you're welcome to come to our site, AskWiseCounsel.com, and submit a question anytime. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to talk about it on the air. But we're going to have 2 different questions that people have submitted. We're going to be able to answer those. Lee and myself will make comments on that. Then we've got some outtakes of people that we have on our website that are going to be outstanding experts in this field and the questions that we ask. And one's certainly going to be about the economy, and the other one's going to be about financial advice and what some people call greed and too much lust after money, right? But anyway, again, if you want to check us out, AskWiseCounsel.com, that's our website. You can go there, submit a question. You can even hear the rest of the story and the things that we'll show here or play on the show here today. So Lee, thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you have a famous background. I hope you can share that a little bit with us in terms of family history and such. So tell us a little bit about that and some of your experiences.
Well, I do come from an insurance background. My family was in the insurance business, and I grew up around the dinner table thinking that my lot in life had been cast in stone to be in the insurance business. So yeah. Right out of school, I went to work for the family company and in the home office, and I felt that was not really a good fit for me.
Okay.
You know, the kind of the corporate rigors was not just wasn't for me.
Okay.
So I went out into the field and worked as an agent for the company and then worked my way into management. And I finally realized one day I really didn't like insurance.
Okay. So, but you liked money, right?
It's a good career. I just did not love doing that. I never felt like the insurance was always the solution for every problem that somebody might have. I mean, that's kind of how
some representatives kind of tell you that, don't they? Yeah.
Well, they do. And I think there's a fit and there's room and for that, you know, in people's financial picture. But I don't think it's always, you know, I think sometimes it's a little oversold.
Right.
That's just my own personal
bias.
And so I had the difficult phone call with my father and my family telling them that I was leaving the family business.
Okay.
And they were all very supportive. And so it was a very easy transition. And so I went to work for a certified financial planning firm.
Okay.
And it was a fee-based firm, and I spent a little over 8 years in that firm, and it was invaluable to forming my, you know, my abilities and my knowledge base in providing financial services.
So you grew a lot in that environment then, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was like being fed from a fire hose. And I did that for 8 years, and then I went and opened my own firm. And okay. So I have right now almost 18 years, and I'm predominantly fee-based, although that's not exclusively true, but I'm about 90% fee-based
okay.
in what I do now, which means I just I charge a fee for financial advisory services, that's kind of, I've built my practice that way intentionally over the years, and very happy to have done it that way.
That's good, good. Well, tell us a little bit about the things you think have helped your clients be most profitable at. Well, even maybe some of your philosophy of investment, because obviously you're you're wanting your clients to grow in their wealth or their opportunity to expand their financial base. And then at the same time, you're concerned about other aspects too. Tell us more a little bit about your philosophy.
I have what I consider to be core and core values. And so the first one is that I have an investment to make as well as my client. And the investment for me is on the front end of the relationship. To spend the time necessary to get to know that particular client and to do what I call 101 education with them, to take them through a process that kind of brings them up to a level of communication where we can effectively communicate, you know, as we move forward. So terms that I may take for granted that they may not understand at all, we want to make sure that they understand what the terminology sounds like. And so that once we start getting into it, we can communicate effectively. And so I spend as much time
building relationships
in those interviews. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a core belief. I believe that's my investment in the relationship.
Sure.
And if it's going to break down, it should break down at that stage.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are just not a good fit.
Yeah.
But you don't want to find that out later.
Sure.
You know, when you have money invested, you really want to find that out on the front end. So I spend a lot of time there. Another core belief that I have is that the money that you don't lose is just as important or even more important than the money that you make.
Okay.
And we can't control markets. We can't control the economy. We can't even predict markets, but we can control risk. Mm-hmm. And so we focus like a laser on how to control risk. And what's interesting is that the way we did that even 5 years ago is not really the best way to do that today.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we controlled risk even 15 and 20 years ago, those things, we have found a lot of those risk controls have broken down in today's markets.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we approach risk is that's where we're always focusing on how do we control risk for our clients and how do we get them into the right mix of assets to help them accomplish their goals without exposing them to more risk than necessary to accomplish those goals.
Yeah.
And the risk profile hasn't really changed, but how we control risk has changed. And I think one of the biggest evolutions in that space, if you will, is the access to processes that we haven't had access to in the past. And really through technology and the bringing down of, you know, the lowering of barriers, we can now access really sophisticated risk control instruments that were not really available to the average investor even, you know, 10 years ago. So we're always watching and seeing who through technology and access, we can get new access to old processes to bring to help our clients. And
well, that's good. So the whole industry is getting more professional, you might even say, with the technology and help more sophistication than really.
But it is. I think that as an advisor, you know, for me to always look for, you know, some of the access, you know, I guess the new processes that are available to me and to educate myself on how I can use those in my practice. And it's really not me building them where I can do them, but it's me bringing people who can perform those services into my practice on behalf of my clients.
Yeah, I know that's something you do that's unique and different than most advisors I've come in contact with, where you really search out real professionals in the industry by even financial products. Tell us a little bit about that. How do you do that?
Yeah, there's some superstars that are what I call, you know, portfolio managers or boutique investment firms, and they've developed processes and they have the technology and the education and they can execute. And what we do is we identify that talent. And then we get agreements with them to manage part of our client money. So instead of trying to grow it organically in-house, we find that talent and then we make deals with those guys, if you will. So we put together a team of investment advisors that I think is I call it an all-star lineup. So for example, we may have one firm that's really good on maybe an international stocks, but they're not that great in fixed income. So I typically wouldn't do both pieces with that manager.
Sure.
So we kind of identify people who excel in certain parts of the market, and we bring them together to form that team. And we just share whatever the client, the revenue is from that fee-based account, we just split it among the managers and they all take a piece. And so we believe that brings the best process all around, you know, the horn for our clients. So there's not, you know, we don't think there's any part of a portfolio that's what we would call throwaway or that we can compromise on. So in my world, it's either all fixed or it's all broken. That's how I think. That's how my mind works.
Right.
So we're constantly examining our processes and we're reviewing and we're making changes as necessary and to make sure that we are, number one, controlling the things that we can control and that the managers that we're bringing in to invest client money, that they're doing what we expect them to do.
Okay, good. Well, I know you have a heart for the Lord. The Lord's guided you in so many different ways in your life, and you want to serve even ministries and things that you've done personally, even family-wise, but how is God influencing your business strategy and the things that you do?
Yeah, that's a good question, John. Certain things come easy for me. And, so it's hard for me to take credit for things that I think God has just kind of gifted me with. And mm-hmm. So one thing that is, I have a perspective about money that I think that if you have enough money, more money really won't make you happy. But when you have enough money, that's enough money. Mm-hmm. And if you control your lifestyle and if you're content, then I think that's a good place to be. So God's kind of made it easy for me to do that where it's easy for me, for example, to not take unfair advantage of clients. That's kind of in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, because your heart is there, right?
It is. And again, I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else, but that comes pretty easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And to whatever the news is, I don't mind telling my clients exactly what's going on, even if sometimes it's not great news. It's not
right.
A great result. But it's easy for me to be honest and forthright with my clients, and it's easy for me to not take unfair advantage. And I think that's just the way that I'm built,
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I know the economy from many perspectives doesn't look as great right now. We're going to talk a little bit more about that because that's our first question coming up here. But overall, you said your key thing was first not to lose money, right? How do you say that?
Yeah, to not lose money. If you lose money, it's really difficult to make up lost ground. Just very simply, if the market corrects 50%, you now have to make 100% return to get back to where you were.
Yeah.
And in order to make 100% return, you have to take a lot of market risk that got you to where you're at in the first place. So we really try not volatility is going to be there, but we try not to participate in these big market corrections. And the way we used to do that is just not the way we do it anymore. Things that we do in portfolios that are inversely correlated to the market, which means if the market moves in one direction, this particular investment will move in the opposite direction of the market. So we try to use those types of tools are called options, but we try to use those in portfolios to control portfolio risk. And to the extent that we can do that, it's easier to stay with your plan, stay with your goals and your objectives. If we don't lose so much money that shakes you out, for example, if we have heavy portfolio losses and a client says, I can't do this anymore, and they sell their investments, we've now locked in losses.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel very personal about that.
Sure.
So my responsibility is to keep them out of that situation,
mm-hmm.
To understand how much volatility they can tolerate, and to try to build a portfolio around that so that they're not put in that position to have to make that very difficult choice.
Okay.
So there's clinical, and then there's also emotional. And if we don't understand the emotional investor, then I think we're missing a big part of how people approach managing their money.
That's good.
So we really try to control the risk. We think it's probably the most critical component of our practices.
Yeah, great. Again, if you want to reach Lee Lyon, he's on Facebook, and it's LYON, Lee Lyon. And we're excited to have him here join us. Let's go ahead and take Lee, our first question that we've got here submitted by George. And this is very apropos for having you here, of course. He's talking about where is the economy heading? Kind of a loaded question. I was mentioning to you earlier about, obviously I'm no expert in that whole field, but you and I have had a chance to meet some experts that we're going to share a little bit here on some of our audio clips in a minute. But the point is that I was watching an indicator to me was on Bloomberg. I was watching, they said that Facebook's actual net worth was now greater than Walmart. And yet their sales were 3% of what Walmart is. And so they were talking about how the tech industry, the high-tech industry, half of the companies are profitable, half of them are not, but that they're really out of balance with that. The tech bubble, you might say, may reoccur anytime soon, just from a worldly point of view financially. But so give us some of your thoughts on the economy and where it's heading and what's happening.
I think that's a good question. And I know a lot of people are concerned about the economy in the terms of this whole recovery has been a little bit uneasy for a lot of people. So what we see and what I'm reading is that we're running out of tools to boost the economy.
Propped up, right?
Yeah, we've emptied our our toolbox. We did an $800 billion stimulus package. We're in a very synthetically manipulated market from the interest rates, and which has given a rise to the stock market, especially high dividend stocks. And bonds are at an historic all-time high, which means the yields are at a historic all-time low. And so some of the most important drivers the government has to boost the economy have already been... that's already been used. So we don't really know what they have left in the toolbox to use to help the economy grow.
Yeah.
And then when we look at the other side of the coin, we see a lot of stress, and not just in the U.S. economy, but in the worldwide economy, where we see really record levels of debt. We see sovereign debt, and that just doesn't really make any sense. And it's hard to see kind of an end game of how the economy can grow under all the debt that is incurring. And when you look at the production of these economies, that just doesn't really match up right now. So we think there's a lot of intrinsic risk right now in the economy. And you put that on the end of a 6-year bull market. And we just kind of think that right now is the time to be a little bit careful. And although we don't have a crystal ball, but we do think there's just a lot of stress right now in the economy from a lot of different places. Nothing to me looks that good right now. I'm appreciative that energy has come down. Energy costs have come down, but we don't know how long that will last. And if the economy is weak and there's not a lot of demand for energy, it could stay low for reasons that we may not like. But low energy costs should help some, but that's about the only thing that I really see that gives me any real optimism.
Yeah, any
about
positive
the going
signs. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and the economy right now.
And then geopolitical, when you start folding that in, it just gets even scarier.
Right, yeah, countries that, and of course, the European common market, all the threats there from other countries and their weaknesses, and then you got Russia in the pool too. So it's a world economy now, no doubt about it. Let's go ahead and we're going to listen to Ed Coble, who was a speaker that we had in Wise Counsel not long ago. Actually, this is a talk that he gave May 22nd where he was talking. This actual is on our website. You can join for free at our Ask Wise Counsel site and be able to watch Ed Coble. It's a long talk, but he shares his perspectives, and he believes the Lord has told him in prayer and meditation that the economy is going to make another correction here soon. And in this little segment that we're going to play for you right now, he just talks about some of the things that are happening in the world economy again, that another indicator. But his company, which is DeBartolo Development, they were able to withstand the decline in 2008 in the real estate market because they sold out, because Ed felt he heard from the Lord that it was time to get out of the market and then come back in later, which they did. And they came back in later and did well. And they've been out now getting out of the market again because of they think it's another correction coming. So let's hear what Ed has to say, and then we'll go ahead and get on with the rest of our show here.
McKinsey Global, they're probably the preeminent global institute in town. So what we've seen is debt is not deleveraging. You know, you've heard a lot coming out of Washington of how consumers have deleveraged. It's simply not true. In 07, Progressive Revelation, there's a credit. You can watch the credit tables of America. And right now, those credit tables are 500% worse than they were in 07. What that means is the amount of loans that are in default and behind in payment, 500 times worse. And we know what happened in 07 and 08. Debt in our planet has grown from $142 trillion in 07 to $199 trillion today. This is the largest amount of debt in the history of the world. Those numbers mean that we're substantially worse condition than we were in 2008. When it comes to debt, a lot of fingers get pointed at the United States, and rightly so. Just prior to the last recession, U.S. national debt was $9 trillion, and as you know, it's 18 headed very soon this year to $19 trillion. The U.S. isn't the only ones that are guilty of that, though. We're going to talk about that. 7 years after the bursting of the global credit bubble, resulted in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Debt continues to grow. In fact, rather than reducing indebtedness or deleveraging, all major economies today, have increased their borrowing relative to gross domestic product. Global debt in these last couple of years has grown by $57 trillion. So that raises the debt to GDP, which is a ratio that we watch, by 17 points. What's surprising to a lot of people is the worst nation is China. If you can believe it, Chinese debt's grown $7 trillion since 07 to $28 trillion. Even as big as they are with the number of people they have, if you go to China today, they literally will go out to a place like Middleburg and scrape, I'll call it a little town. They'll scrape that town, and they will build 30 high-rise buildings there. and they'll build industrial buildings and shopping centers with nobody there. And you'll drive around, and it looks feels like an apocalyptic movie. You're like, where are the people? Well, they haven't moved in yet. Now, they are converting a lot of people from agriculture into the city, but they have a gap, just like we have in the United States, is training people to go from farming to technology or moderate urban jobs. Literally, they have 50 cities like that with thousands and thousands and thousands of empty buildings. It's for a real estate guy, it's fascinating. You look around, and they have a worse shadow banking system than we do. You know, it's a communist country, and so they just keep hiding the pee. That's how they're able to do it. What all this means is that our long-term global economic problems have gotten much worse. The short-lived period of relative stability that we have been enjoying has been fueled by unprecedented amounts of debt and voracious money printing. Anyone with half a brain, and especially Christians, because we have the ability to talk to our Heavenly Father, should be able to see that this is a giant bubble about to break. The current situation, if you think about it, so debt has gone up $57 trillion. Interest rates are at an all-time low. I've been in this for 33 years in real estate business, and most of my career, interest rates have been 5, 6, 7% prime rate, most of my career. Last 15, 16 years, not so much, but up until then. And that's where nominal rates have been for most of modern history. So if you think about it, servicing this debt, if interest rates go up 100 or 200 basis points, right now it takes 72% of the gross domestic product that the United States produce to cover the debt at these historic low rates. So if it goes up 100 or 200 basis points, you can see we're immediately bankrupt. Think about this. Internet companies that didn't exist 5 years ago are worth billions of dollars. let me give you two examples. Pinterest. Anybody here use Pinterest? I'm sure we had a few Pinterest users. You know, that company just recently got valued at $11 billion. Uber, which is sort of taking over pressing into the cab business, just got valued at $50 billion. These numbers are staggering, and we all remember what happened in 1999 and 2000 when the internet bubble burst. But, so you look at it, and I spent a lot of time on Wall Street. I'm taking part of our apartment company public now, so I'm back and forth all the time. And they're still drinking the Kool-Aid. This is great. You should put your money in it. You guys are nuts. here's one. I love because it's shopping center story. So, JCPenney announced, they just announced this, they only lost $167 million for the first quarter. Yippee! And you read some of these reports from there's analysts that cover all these different companies, and you read these reports, they only lost $167. You should buy the stock. I'm like, are you crazy? it's just ridiculous. So they're JCPenney, and I use that because everybody knows them. Yeah, cumulative loss since 2011. Drum roll, John. Is three? They've lost $3.5 billion since 2011. Wow. Like the federal government. How do you invest? Sears is the same way. So on Penney's in 2012, the Wall Street analyst said, "Boy, buy this stock. Buy Penney's." Great turnaround story, $42 a share. It's at $9. it's irrational.
Okay, this is John Beener. You're listening to the Ask Wise Counsel show, and we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back with you soon. Catch up on the news.
Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial Incorporated, JWC, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through J.W. Cole Advisors Incorporated, JWCA. Line Investment Services Incorporated and JWC, JWCA are unaffiliated entities. Lee Lyon, Lyon Investment Services and JWC, JWCA do not provide tax or legal advice. Always consult your tax advisor and or legal counsel regarding your specific situation. Investments and strategies mentioned may not be suitable for all investors. Specific recommendations are based on the review of the client's individual portfolio. Prior performance is no guarantee of future results.
Well, good morning. This is John Bean. You're listening to the Ask Wise Counsel show. Thank you for joining us. We're in our second segment of the show, and we're with our co-host, Lee Lyon, who is a registered investment advisor and representative and the smartest guy I've ever met in the industry. And so we're delighted to have him co-hosting with us. We've been talking about the economy and where the ups and downs are, and you just heard an outtake from Ed Coble, who is the COO of DeBartolo Development, and they're a $5 billion company. So they have a lot of cautions and concern and believe that even the Lord has been showing them that there's going to be a correction here and affecting our economy soon. We've got another outtake because Ed talks about it later, and we've been sharing it with our Wise Council members about the Shemitah. The Shemitah is really a term in the Bible where the Jews, God told the Jews to plant and their crops and grow, but on the seventh year rest. And the Jews did not do that. So let's listen to Sid Roth, who's interviewing Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, who's been wrote the book called The Shemitah. He also wrote the book Harbinger. But he's going to talk a little bit more. What does that mean, and how does that affect our economy right now? So let's just listen in to Sid Roth and Rabbi Kahn.
You know, the best-selling book, Harbinger, which means the warning of judgments, they're reappearing again. There's nine of them. But one of the ones that is reappearing is the understanding and the revelation of a biblical term called the Shemitah. Now, Rabbi Jonathan, what is the Shemitah?
The Shemitah is an ancient mystery. It goes back over 3,000 years to Moses, Mount Sinai. Yet it is affecting everything from 9/11 to the rise and fall of the economy, to the crashing of the stock market, to the rise and fall of nations, everything from World War I, World War II, what is happening right now, and what will happen. It is the most precise, mind-boggling, biblical mystery, and it's coming true now.
Now, when you talked about it in your book, The Harbinger, did you have any idea that this would so affect us today in our everyday life? I mean, and how big it is.
I knew it was happening. I mean, at least in a certain period, but I had no idea that it didn't just happen then. It's been affecting us, every single one who's watching right now. It's affecting every life since the day we were born and the future. I had no idea until very recently how big it was. It's really mind-blowing.
Okay, let's just start with basics.
Yeah.
What does the Shemitah mean? What does the word mean?
The Shemitah means the release, but it can also mean the fall or the collapse in Hebrew. It can also mean the shaking. And what it is is this. In Mount Sinai, God gave this law to Israel. Every seventh year, you would have a Sabbath year, a year of rest. That rest was called the Shemitah. There was no sowing, no reaping of the land. And on the last day of the Shemitah, the day is called Elul 29 on the biblical calendar. On that last day, something unique happens. All credit is wiped away. All debt is wiped away. The financial accounts of the nation are wiped clean. Now, this was to be a blessing. But when Israel turned against God, the Shemitah comes back as a sign of judgment on a nation that is driving God out of its life. So this is where it affects us particularly today. So the thing is that the Shemitah affects, as you can see, the economy right away. It's today it would be a recession or a depression. I mean, and the Wall Street, it literally is the collapse of our financial realm. So what we're going to see
we're going to have a collapse that's not a blessing. We're going to have the judgment type of collapse.
We have already seen it happen, and it's actually getting more specific. The last two Shemitahs have been so exact, so precise since 9/11, and we're coming up to another one as well. So what we're going to see, and this is what blew me away, is it has been affecting everything in our lives from really there's no end to it. It's amazing, and it's precise, down to the days, the hours, even the seconds.
Okay, give us some background. Like, it's they explained the every 7 years.
Yeah, every seventh year. So you have this rest, and here's the keys to know, because we're gonna see what's happening right now. The keys are, number one, you have the 7 year cycle. So the 7 year cycle, everything stops, and then you have this financial wipeout.
Okay. According to the Bible, every seventh year,
yes,
we have just a blessing from God, or if we haven't done what God's asked, it becomes a judgment.
It became a judgment. Actually, okay. In 586 BC, wiped out Jerusalem. They were in Babylon for 70 years, and the Bible says it was because it was timed according to how many Shemitahs they broke. So it becomes this amazing thing. It not only wipes away accounts, it can wipe away cities and nations.
You know, if someone is a non-believer in the Bible as being from God, just looking at these patterns that are affecting us today, that have affected us historically, our nations being rising and falling, economies rising and falling. I mean, it's just, how could anyone not be a believer in the Bible?
Yeah, amazing. And here, Sid, if you look, here's an example. If you look at the last 40 years of our financial history, you look for, there's five great turning points or long-term collapses combined often with recessions. When did they take place? I'll give you an example. 1973, first one. Second one, 1980. Third, 1987. Fourth, 2000. And fifth, 2007, great recession. What do you notice about all of them? Every one of them is separated by a seven-year period. I mean, 73 to 80, 7 years. 80 to 87, 7 years. 2000 to 2000, 7 years. Are any of them linked specifically to the year of the Shemitah? 1973, year of the Shemitah. 1980, Shemitah. 87, Shemitah. 2000, Shemitah. 2007, the Shemitah. Every single 100% of them happened according to the appointed time in the Bible. Some of these things went down to the seconds. So if you go, listen, take it larger. Go to the greatest crashes in history, and you'll find, do any of them take place linked to the year of the Shemitah? The majority of them do. I mean, I'll give you an example. This is the third greatest crash in history, 1937 and 38. When did the Shemitah happen? 1937 and 38, same year. In fact, when the Shemitah begins, the next day, Wall Street collapses. Here's another one, the Great Recession. When does that happen? It is 2007 and 8. When does the Shemitah happen? 2007 to 8. And on the exact day of the Shemitah appointed to wipe away the financial...
This is John Beaner again. You've been listening to Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. We've got several resources by Jonathan Kahn on our website, askwisecounsel.com. If you want to hear the rest of the story, there's a phenomenal things even on YouTube by Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, who's a messianic rabbi, believes in Jesus Christ, and has written the book Harbinger, again, also the book The Shemitah, about the economy and how the seventh year we're going to take a hit. And I've gone back and even looked, Lee, you've probably seen this too, in our Wise Counsel meetings where I've shared the patterns from 1930 all the way up to this year of how practically every 7 years there's another downturn in the economy, another correction. And many people are believing it's going to happen. As early as September, maybe even earlier. And, of course, other world events could indicate to that. You want to make a quick comment on that?
Well, I mean, from my perspective as an advisor, I have to practice my trade in a way that, number one, I think serves my clients. Or I guess that number one is God-honoring. And that I'm just honest and forthright and produce the best results that I can for my clients and then to be honest with my clients. And beyond that, for me, you know, I have to advise and practice as if we're going to be here for another 100 years.
Sure.
And so, you know, the markets, they go up, they go down, the economies go up and they go down. And I think that what I would just, what kind of bothers me is when I see, I'll bring on a new client and I'll see where they're doing a lot of different things that they think are diversifying their portfolio. So they may own large companies, mid-sized companies, domestic companies, international companies. And when the market corrects, all of those different asset styles move in the same direction, which is down. So diversification is not that helpful if it's not meaningful diversification. And what I mean
in
by
a down
that,
economy, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
does
if everything's going down, all your diversification doesn't work when you need it. And so what you really have to do is find out what might work and how do you exploit what's happening in the economy. And there's ways to do that. You know, so so we want as much flexibility as we can, and we want to be able to attack falling markets in a way that exploits that.
And protect people, to
protect money. And you know, the speakers that we've had on today are they're alarming, But from my perspective, everything creates opportunity.
That's true.
And if you're static in your portfolio, if you just say buy and hold, to me, that makes no sense.
Right.
It did when I came into the business. And the best thinking out there was buy and hold and be strategic. And so it's called strategic asset allocation. And for me, all that means anymore is that I have to own things that I don't want to own when I don't want to own them.
Yeah.
That just doesn't really make any sense. So we try to own things that we want to own when we want to own them. And when we no longer want to own them, we sell them.
That's good.
And we buy things, other things that we think represent opportunity or value.
Good.
So we're very active in how we manage.
Yeah.
So to me, everything is kind of looks like an opportunity to me.
That's great. Again, you've been hearing from Lee Lyon, who is a registered investment advisor representative, and he can be reached at 334-5297. Lee's our co-host for the day. We're going to take a couple other questions. We're going to squeeze them in here as their showtime runs out. We've got a question from James who says, what are the ethical standards for financial planning people in the industry? Because he's concerned about some of them maybe overstepping their bound or be concerned a little bit about greed. Any quick thoughts on that, Lee?
Well, I do. I think greed works both ways, and I never understood this as well as I do now. And there was the communicator of the gospel out of New York City. This guy I really listened to a lot, who's a pastor of a church called Redeemer Church.
Uh-huh.
And he said that that greed, if you have a lot of money and you love your money, that's greed.
Right.
If you don't have a lot of money and you resent that you don't have a lot of money and you're envious of people that do have a lot of money, that's greed as well.
Jealousy, actually, and greed together.
But it's kind of the same thing. And I do agree with that. So I think that for an advisor, you have to be transparent. And that means that everything's disclosed. So we see a lot of mutual funds, and I will use mutual funds in my practice. I don't love mutual funds, but sometimes they're necessary. But there's a lot of fees and expenses in mutual funds that sometimes are not really disclosed and people don't understand.
Right.
So we try to be very, very transparent on how the fees and costs and expenses are, work in the portfolio. And that's one way that I think helps protect the client is have
that's good.
A high level of transparency.
You said something there about greed can be work both ways, can't it? I mean, John D. Rockefeller, we've got a little outtake here that we're going to share with you just 2 minutes of the story of John D. Rockefeller, which many people, they hung him in effigy back in the 1920s, and he was the first man in America to ever become a millionaire. And then, of course, he catapulted that in many, many millions of dollars. But people hung him in effigy, thought he was going to die. And we're going to tell that story right now that was – it's on our part of our Genesis website or Genesis Workshop series, John D. Rockefeller. Let's hear what it has to say about his life.
Few people know, but at 33, John D. Rockefeller had already made his first $1 million. He dedicated every waking moment to his work. And at 43, he controlled the largest business in the world. By 53, he had become the richest man on earth and the world's only billionaire. For his achievements, however, he had bartered his own happiness and health. He developed alopecia, a condition in which not only the hair on his head drops off, but also from his eyebrows and arms. One biographer said that he looked like a mummy. His weekly income was millions of dollars, but his digestion was so bad he could only eat crackers and milk. Newspapers pictured that this industrial pirate, as they called him, was going to die soon. The people that worked for him in his oil fields and mining fields hung him in effigy. They thought he was a pirate and tyrant. His bodyguards watched him day and night. He found little peace or happiness in the wealth that he had accumulated. He couldn't sleep well and was miserable all the time. Now at his age and a very frail man, the newspapers had started to write his epitaph. During another sleepless night, he received a spiritual awakening that his wealth would do him no good in heaven or hell. His dream was similar to a visit from Scrooge's ghost in Dickens' Christmas Carol. Changed, he got up the next morning with a plan and established the John D. Rockefeller Foundation, which today has been probably the greatest philanthropic organization in the history of our country having an impact on medicine by eliminating hookworm, providing penicillin, and saving millions of lives from malaria, tuberculosis, diphtheria, and many other diseases. Remarkably, John D. Rockefeller lived to gradually give away his wealth until the ripe old age of 98.
What a turnaround! Rockefeller was a Christian who finally recognized that God had given him a talent to make money. It wasn't just his drive and intelligence or energy. He finally realized it was the Lord doing it through him, and he was allowing him also to suffer for being off what I call the plumb line or the greater purpose in his life. And here's the amazing part. He lived to be 98 years old, driven by the desire to give away his wealth. He publicly relished giving. For the rest of his life and even beyond, he lived the scripture, to whom much is given, much is required. Thanks for listening to John D. Rockefeller's story. It's part of our Ask Wise Counsel site and the How and Why Good Companies Create True Wealth. It's part of, again, the Genesis series, something you'd be open to watch and listen to as you just sign up free as a member of Wise Counsel, askwisecounsel.com. And for the rest of the story about Ed Coble and even John D. Rockefeller and Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, again, you can go to our website, check it out. If you want to list a question that we can answer at our next radio show, we'd love to hear from you. We also have a program there called The Best Businesses on a Mission. It's exciting because we're looking for those companies that are doing unique things like Lee Lyon and Dick Erickson with SunTire, RPM Automotive, and even American Enterprise Bank. These are companies doing unique things to honor God in a deeper way with their employees, their customers, suppliers, and vendors. And they're working to serve the Lord first and then serve their employees and customers and all of the community together. We're looking for those kind of businesses. If you work for one of those companies or you'd like to nominate someone that you've had as that's been a supplier for you or a company that's done work for you, love to have you go to our website called The Best Businesses on a Mission. It's also on our Ask Wise Counsel site. Have you nominate someone? We've got another little outtake to share here because part of the question that, again, James asked us earlier, Lee, was the question about ethics, standards, and financial planning. And there's a group, you've heard of them, called Kingdom Advisors, and a guy named Ron Blue, who actually lives in Atlanta. And I know he was a CPA for many years out of Indianapolis. And then he got involved with Campus Crusade for Christ on their board. Even Larry Burkett and Christian Financial Concepts, which later became Crown Ministry with Howard Dayton. But Ron is in a unique story. He felt God calling him to sell the financial planning business that he started, which had 7 or 8 locations, to the employees, Ron Blue and Associates, and start a new group called Kingdom Advisors, a nonprofit. And you've heard about it, Lee. Do you know much about that group called Kingdom Advisors?
I know they take a biblical perspective to money, and right. And they teach people, I think, how to handle money, which I think is critically important. A lot of that's budgeting and how to handle personal finances. And when you get into that with a client, to me, that's not been a very successful endeavor because you're telling people in large part how to spend their money. But the biggest problem that I see is people not using their money wisely, mm-hmm. and getting either into debt, overbuying, overspending, and not being prudent in how they use the resources that God has given them. Mm-hmm. And the single source of financial stress is debt or having more months than you have money. Financial stress is awful,
yeah.
and it's destructive in our families. So from my perspective, if you to not put yourself in a position to be under financial stress is probably one of the most critically important things you can do.
Right,
and it might mean living within your means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for every individual that, I can't really help them with that. It might feel judgmental, from them coming from me. So really behavior and how you handle your money is the single most important thing you can do to not have financial stress.
Right.
And it really doesn't have that much to do with how much money you make. It really doesn't. There's a point where either you're a content person or you're not. And if you have enough, and you're not content, more money simply won't make you content. But you know, I like more money. It gives you more options. I think it's in and of itself is a good thing. But there's not really a direct correlation between contentment, fulfillment, and happiness with having more money than you need,
right?
To live contently,
right?
If there's such a word, but to be content.
So the idea is to have the peace of God in you, okay, and you can withstand all kinds of pressure, including the money pressures of things.
Well, it does, and it has to come down to at some point, you know. And I don't call myself a Christian advisor, you know. I'll try to. Honestly, I don't. If I bring on a client and they're not a believer, they don't know I'm a believer.
Yeah,
and they won't know for a long time because I've been around a lot of believers.
Right,
that's not what you lead with. But you know, I'll tell you, it makes a big difference. You know, to me, working with them if they're content and if they're whole. But
right.
that's and then the thing I can do is I look for is your life at some level has to be about other people. It has to at some level be about not yourself, but about people in your around you in your community.
Okay, thanks. Well, let's go ahead and listen to this audio clip again. The Ron Blue interview that I did years ago. Again, founder of Kingdom Advisors. He's going to give us a little insight on their strategy to help financial advisors and planners put biblical perspectives into play in their practice.
Literally, when I started, I didn't charge anybody anything to go through the training. I said, I don't know whether I have anything to say that's of any value.
Okay. Okay. So you were test marketing anyway.
I was test marketing. And what I was finding were people were going away and saying, man, this is life-changing. This is life-changing. And it baffled me when they said that.
All right.
But what I realized, and I think this is good for those that are listening also, if you look at James 3:17, it says the wisdom that is from above is first of all pure, peaceable, gentle, full of mercy, willing to yield and no hypocrisy. And you know, almost all believers who are serious about their faith have probably memorized that verse. Uh-huh. And my challenge to the advisor is that when men and women open their checkbooks to you, they're letting you into their life. What you have an opportunity to do then is to bring wisdom, God's wisdom, into your advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's a unique opportunity that you've been given. Well, what's happening is the advisor had never, ever considered that as a part of their value proposition. Mm-hmm. Biblical wisdom.
That's a good point. Yeah. Good point.
And the thing that really has captured me over the last 4 years is that verse begins with the word but. Okay, so I went back and said, why is the but there? Okay, well, it's the contrast. And James 3:16, which probably nobody has memorized, but what James 3:16 says, for where envy and self-seeking exist, all forms of confusion and evil are there.
Okay.
So you have juxtaposed there the world system versus the biblical system.
Right. Very good. Yeah.
And my question to the advisors is, how many of you have been trained either covertly or overtly on envy and self-seeking? And 100% of that.
Yeah, we get it every day. We get enough dose of it all the time, right?
We get it all the time.
Okay, again, this is John Beaner. You've been listening to Ask Wise Counsel Show. We're excited that you joined us. You were listening to Ron Blue. And again, if you want to learn more from the interview with Ron Blue, the founder of Kingdom Financial Advisors, go to our website, askwisecounsel.com. We've been here with Lee Lyon. Thank you, Lee, for joining us here today. It's been exciting fun. It's an exciting time in our economy, in our society, and God is in control. And if we love him, we're going to walk with him deeper. We're going to have more fun, enjoyment, and God is involved in people's life, whether they know it or not. And if you just turn to him, God's going to have answers for you, and we're going to find joy and peace in all that we do, even in difficult circumstances. So thanks for joining us on the Ask Wise Counsel Show. Until next week, this is John Beaner signing off.